Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Well, I hope that life is great wherever you happen to be, or as good as it can be. As I record these words at the moment, a shaft of sunlight, a little bit of late September sun, is beaming across my face and giving me a nice, big, warm glow. And I've got to say, I'm definitely in need of that at the moment. I hope that life is good for you. Thank you very much for all of your emails. By the way, some name checks coming up here, so stand by for those. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster, for his hard work ongoing. Thank you to Haley for her hard work in setting up the guests, including Michelle, the guest we're about to speak with here. Michelle Clare, who is a medium with a fascinating story. She's in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll talk with her in just a moment. If I sound slightly different on this edition, and maybe on some subsequent editions, the reason is that I might have mentioned this, but the builders are doing renovation work on an apartment a couple of spaces below me. And there's a lot of knocking, drilling, scraping, and banging going on. Seems to be endless. I'm hoping that it will come to an end eventually, but just so that you don't hear any of that, I'm using one of these microphones that you can go very, very close to. That's the reason for it. You know, it's one of those things. Normally, these things are not a problem. I can close the windows and it's all fine, but not on this occasion. So it just adds to all the fun that life has delivered to me lately. But, you know, whatever. Hopefully one of these days, my flat might be might be the target of a complete renovation, which it sorely and desperately needs. But don't get me started with that. It's the biggest worry that that I've got at the moment. So I suppose I'm lucky if that's all there is I've got to worry about. Thank you very much. If you've emailed recently about the radio show, by the way, asking me questions about it and its future, it's not something that I'm able to answer. I've had a lot of emails about this. It's above my pay grade. So please, for the moment, don't ask me. Thank you. When I know, you'll know, and when you know, I'll know, I think is the answer to that question. But thank you very much for caring enough to ask me that during this last week. But as I say, I don't know it. I know nothing, as the man in Fawlty Towers, great comedy show, used to say. Guest on this edition, medium Michelle Clare. We're going to speak with her in just a moment, but as I said, we are going to do some shout-outs here. And I've been going through the emails, as I always do. Let's see. Piers. Thank you, Piers, very much. Very kind email. Thank you for the things that you said and also for the suggestion that you made. Maureen says, I don't have a story to tell, that's okay, but I'd like to ask Howard, that's me, if he knows about the Alaska Triangle. This is something that I saw on TV this week, about an area of Alaska where weird things happen and people disappear. 1,600 of them over the years, apparently. I'm sure he will know about this. But if not, it may well be worth investigating further. I should say so, Maureen. I have heard, only through TV shows that I've looked at. It's not something that I've investigated myself on the show. So thank you for giving me that nudge in that direction. Thomas, great suggestion, Thomas. I emailed you back about this. Would like me to do a show on location. And I agree with that. I really enjoyed the show that I put together and broadcast myself, by myself, from Liverpool a few years ago. I took a little rucksack full of equipment up there, and it worked like a dream. So maybe I'll be able to do that again. I'm not sure, but we'll see. I'll ask the boss. Maybe you can too. Steve O'Connor, thank you very much for your email, Steve. Craig, thank you for your suggestion. I did do an hour about Freemasonry on the radio a few years ago. I spoke with somebody from that organization who explained what it was all about and answered people's questions about Freemasonry. But we might revisit that, and thank you. Chris and Lani says, my show feels like a real community. I think it is. I always said that it's like a family here. And I think that that is probably the case. But Chris and Lani, nice to know that you're there and nice to know that you feel that way. Sean, thank you for your email. I'll be listening. You asked me to listen back to one of my very earliest shows. About 600 hours of podcasting ago, it is. Sean, I'm going to. Paul, thank you very much for your email. And Simon in Aberdeen and your dad, my very best wishes and warm thoughts to you both. You know why that is. And Simon, thank you for making contact with me. All right, let's get to the guest on this edition of The Unexplained, Michelle Clare, guided by spirit, her biography says, certified medium, psychic, energy healer, life coach. Michelle Clare uses her gifts to heal, enlighten, encourage, and inspire. And if you take a look around you, I don't know what your country is like, but I'm taking a look around me in the United Kingdom, where we have shortages and all sorts of fears and worries and problems at the moment. And then inflation is kicking up again. We didn't have inflation for decades here. It's back big time. So there's a lot to worry about now. Maybe we need a bit of inspiring. I don't know. So let's get to Phoenix, Arizona, and say, Michelle Clare, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Hi, Howard. Thank you so much for having me today.
I heard you on the radio in America, and I thought, here is somebody very uplifting, and I think at the moment the world needs a bit of uplift. So that's the sole and only reason why I made that connection. And then I read about you, and I'm glad I did.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yes, I agree. The world needs as much uplifting and light as we can bring into it right now.
Now, I think we should get into your story first off, really, before we go anywhere else with this conversation and talk about the various things that you do. Your story is remarkable, not in that it started young for you, because that happens to a lot of people, though I'd like you to tell me about that, but also about the path that you took. And there was one event in particular that was absolutely transformative for you. So I'm going to shut up now and let you tell me your story. This began, first off, like so many other people who are involved in spiritual things and mediumship, started when you were a kid.
Absolutely. When I was 12 years old, my grandfather transitioned, and I use that word for died because I don't believe we die. We just transition. And so what I noticed after he transitioned was he and I were still communicating. And I would tell my mom, Grandpa says this or Grandpa says that. And my mom would say, well, I know that's what you would think he would say if he was still here. So I really quickly realized, okay, this conversation is between me and Grandpa. I don't need to share it with the world, but I always felt very connected to him. So that happened when I was 12. Then what happened later on in April 2000, I actually had my first near-death experience. And at that point in time, I didn't even know it was a near-death experience. I didn't have the words for that. I didn't know there was something called that. But what happened to me is I was in the hospital that day, and my sister-in-law had just given birth. So I was there visiting her and the baby, and her RN actually happened to be one of my friends from high school. I was standing in the hallway talking to her, and all of a sudden I had a massive seizure. But what I remember is opening my eyes, and I was laying with my head on my grandma's lap, and she had transitioned a couple years earlier from this point in time. And I remember looking up at her and seeing her healthy and young and glowing. And then I started looking around, and I noticed I was in this white room. And in this white room, it appeared to have walls, but at the same time, every cell, every molecule in the wall was alive and almost radiating light and love. And so as I was kind of just soaking it in and feeling so complete and so whole and so loved, I looked next to her and I saw a 12-foot angel standing there. She had wings. As soon as I saw her, I went to look at her wings, right? I wanted to see the feathers. And I went to look at her wings, and I realized they were actually made of light, not feathers. And they kind of moved like the northern lights or the aurora borealis. And they seemed translucent and iridescent, and yet they spanned eternity all at the same time.
12-foot angel. Was that angel there, do you think, for you?
I absolutely do, because as I looked at her, I thought to myself, what is your name? And she answered me in my head, and I had never known about telepathic communication before. And she said her name was Madeline and that she was one of my guardian angels. And I was just truly in awe of this beautiful, stunning angel, of her love, her compassion, and the whole place that I was in. And the next thing I know, I hear someone yelling, code, code, code. And I'm back in my body, and my arm felt like it weighed 100 pounds. It felt so heavy and so dense.
Okay. And I mean, clearly, I mean, you're sending me video at the moment. We're still an old-fashioned radio-style show here. But, you know, you look absolutely fine now. You're totally recovered. You're okay.
I am. Yes, and they never found out what caused the seizure. They admitted me to the hospital, and it was always an unknown. And so for me, that first near-death experience was actually seems to be my ability to touch the angelic realm or to communicate more with other people on the other side. So it felt like an opening. But then what happened was I just got busy living life and remembered it very vividly and that it happened and kind of continued on.
When you say that it happened and it was vivid, and I have told my listeners this story before, so I'm going to have to keep this brief, but my own mother had, and I lost her back in 2006, sadly. We were very close. You know, always a wrench to lose your mum, but this was a big one. She told us through her life, and the story never changed, about how when she was 10 years of age, she had a real bad illness. It was like a chest infection. It nearly claimed her life. The doctor said she'll either survive the night or die. During that crisis, she went to a beautiful place that so many people describe. So I have no doubt that there is something. It's not, in my view, and it's only in my opinion, and I'm sure I'm going to have listeners throwing bricks at me saying, it's just your brain and the chemicals in it. Well, maybe it is. But my mother told a story of a three-dimensional reality that she was part of, and they gave her, well, they just said, you know, you've got to go back. There are things that you have to do. And, you know, I must have been one of them, I guess.
Yes.
So, you know, I've got a lot of time for these stories, but your story is a little different in that they were giving you the full, you know, the full Busby Berkeley musical, weren't they? They were giving you the full, you know, sound and light.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a very much a spiritual awakening in my human form.
Okay. And you said there was telepathic communication, you think. What were you told? What were you, you know, what they didn't, you know, they wouldn't have wasted the opportunity. There you are. You've been through that terrible experience. They're communicating with you. Your guardian angel is there. So what did they tell you?
It was just about love and compassion and living life to the fullest. And there was so much, and I grew up feeling very loved, but I felt loved on a whole nother level in this beautiful place that I was in. And so what I realized was, that wasn't special to me. Every single human is loved beyond what we can imagine or even comprehend in our human mind, in our human heart.
Okay. And yet we see, you know, I don't want to be, I came from a radio news background, right? All around us, we see horribleness, don't we? How can everything be about love and light when we look around us and we see people in poverty? We see people who are, you know, stateless. They want to escape from oppression. We see terrible, awful things, terrible crimes, people behaving badly. So how can the point of everything be love and light when, you know, most of us look around us on this plane and that's not what we see?
Absolutely. Well, we come from love and light and we will return to love and light. But the in-between space has free will, and that's where people get ugly.
Okay. But why must other people's free will affect me then? Because my free will would be, if I had my free will, then, you know, it'd be a lovely sunny day every day. And, you know, the you, we call them taps here, you call them faucets, you know, would run beer or Diet Coke.
Or wine.
Or some nice Californian Chardonnay, please. But, you know, that's not how it is.
Right. Absolutely. So what I believe in is pre-life planning. I believe our souls create a plan. They say when we're going back into life, this is what we want to experience. We want to learn this lesson. We want to connect with these other people and we want to do these things. So we have a blueprint for our life when we're coming in. But then once we get here, we do have free will. So although we had all of these wonderful ideals in the soul world where we're thinking, I'm going to do this and I'm going to learn that, what we realize is we come here and life happens and there are other people with free will. And we also have the ability. So I do not believe that everything is predestined, right? I believe we have opportunities every day. So we have the opportunity to stay on path for what our soul wants for us, or we have the opportunities to get off the path. And maybe that's getting connected to the wrong people or being in a substance abuse situation or things like that. None of that is really your soul's plan, but that happens when we let free will enter. This earth, this is the cutting edge learning experience for a soul. I do not believe there is another place that your soul will learn as much in as short of a period of time as the planet Earth. And so with that, there are a lot of free things that are happening.
So if you screw it up here and, you know, you maybe don't follow your plan or you deviate from your plan, does that mean that you automatically have to come back and get it right?
No, I don't believe so, because I truly believe from my three near-death experiences, the best word for God, source, the divine, whatever you want to call the higher power, is love. And it's all about love. And so if you get to this place where you're like, you know, I'm done, then source says, okay, I love you. You're welcome to stay. I don't believe we are ever forced to come back. But I will tell you this. Think of the scope of eternity. After about 300 years in paradise, you might be like, well, you know, I'd kind of like to do something. I'd like to mix it up a little bit today, right? And so with that being said, after these kind of breaks that our soul likes to take, we might choose to come back.
Okay. You know, I'm kind of hoping not to have to come back. You know, I think I've learned enough this time. You know, I've learned enough lessons, but that's a whole other thing. Three near-death experiences, and they return you back every time. What's all that about? Talk to me about those, the others.
Yes. So the second one happened about 6 years after the first, and that was in May 2006. I had had my son 6 weeks. So I have three kids. My youngest was 6 weeks old at that point in time. And I had had multiple complications after delivering him. So I would be in the hospital for 5 days on IV antibiotics with fevers and infection. And then they'd send me home and then it would happen again. So finally, 6 weeks later, they said, we need to do a DNC, which is a procedure where they clear out the uterus they said, it's 45 minutes outpatient. You're going to be fine. The night before, I just had this gut feeling. I don't think I should do this. But I was so tired of being sick. And they were telling me what I wanted to hear. 45 minutes outpatient, fix, done, you're good. So I said, okay, I'm doing it. Well, the next day I go in, still having that nagging gut feeling. And I remember counting backwards for the anesthesiologist. I had had surgery before. And whenever I've had anesthesia, it's just blank. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just a blank space and time for me. But what I remember is counting backwards, going into the operating room. And the next thing I know, I'm looking over and my beautiful, I had 102-pound white German Shepherd who had transitioned a couple years prior, walked into the operating room, laid her head on the gurney, looked at me, and we were gone. And we were on this phenomenal beach. Once again, a place with no time, with amazing amounts of unconditional love, where the ocean was alive, the plants are alive, there were colors there that we don't see in our earthly world.
And this was during anesthesia. Right.
Yes.
Where for most of us, it's like, you know, snap a finger, you're gone. And then the next thing you're waking up.
Exactly. Wow. And I remember we were running on the beach and I remember noticing the sand. It didn't feel like wet sand. I felt like I was running on clouds, even though it looked like sand. And I'm looking at my beautiful dog who's radiant. And once again, we're having telepathic communication and she's letting me know how happy she is that I'm there and we're running together. And I noticed that we're running and running and I'm like, wow, I'm not getting hot or tired or thirsty. This is kind of interesting. And kind of the funny thing about this near-death experience is I absolutely hate to run. So I tell people, like, if you see me running, that's an emergency. It is not me going out for a jog. Here I am in my near-death experience running on the beach. And so while I'm on the beach with her in this experience, I'm quickly, all of a sudden, called away. So I want to say our souls can be in more than one place at a time, which I did not know before this near-death experience. So there was a piece of me that stays on the beach with her, and energetically, a piece of me leaves because my six-week-old son knows that I'm about to leave, and he's scared, and he does not want me to go. And I remember saying to him, I will not leave you. I will find a way to stay. And I started praying and I started asking for help. And I started saying, it's not my time. I'm not ready. I need to stay. My kids need me. And I remember seeing the operating room fill up with this beautiful white light. I call it the Christ light. And I felt Jesus come in. And I remember knowing that I was going to be allowed to stay. The next thing I remember, I wake up. It's been 3.5 hours since my surgery started. And apparently the doctor had ruptured my uterus, missed my aorta by a millimeter. And they called in an emergency laparoscopic surgeon. And while he was in there, the other doctor ruptured my uterus in a second place. And so this 45-minute procedure turned into another week in the hospital, months of recovering.
What an, I mean, literally, what a nightmare. But the interesting thing about this is that you awoke from the usual oblivion that you would have been in were you having surgery. That, you know, a lot of us, most of us have experienced one way or another. And during that, when it all started to go wrong, you awoke and had the near-death experience. So even under those conditions, I've never heard a story like that before, it is possible to awake from anesthesia. And, you know, you hear of people who die on the operating table. I know that you would tell me that's what happens when they die on the operating table. The, you know, the doors are open and they go to this other place. You did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was more vivid, the experience I had, than living life today. That's how vivid it was.
Okay. Talk to me a little more about it. Because look, my mom told me these stories about where she went when she was 10 and told my sister Beryl these stories all our lives, you know, right up to the end of her life. So you talk to me, you know, she talked about beautiful colors that she'd never seen before and just an amazing place that she didn't want to leave. You had reasons for wanting to come back, but that's another story. So talk to me about your experience of that place.
Yes, my experience of that place was literally every oxygen molecule, every molecule of light, every cell on every plant and every piece of sand, it was alive. And I don't remember exactly seeing the sun in the sky, but what it felt like was everything was radiating the light and the love. And I felt so complete. I felt so whole. And I was actually, for the first time ever that I can remember, able to be in the very present moment, where all it was each breath and each step and each breath and each step. And the feeling of completeness, we truly have no words for. And it was also knowing that I was exactly perfect the way that I was. There was nothing that anyone was saying, you need to change this, you need to do that, you need to work harder, you need to, you know, none of that. It was like, you are 100% whole and complete exactly how you are.
How is it that you were able to negotiate your way out of there when so many people who have loved ones and connections and things to do over here don't get that chance? You know, how were you able to buy you? Well, I say buy. How were you able to negotiate your way out of that place?
You know, what I felt like is, and I believe this now as a medium too, that we create exit points in our life before we come into this body. And I believe that was very likely one exit point where I said, you know, if things aren't going well and it's easier for me to come back home to this amazing realm, this will be an exit point for me. And so it was a point, but it wasn't my destination. And when I felt my son calling me, I knew I needed to stay. And so here's the thing, everyone's soul is capable of ushering in a miracle. And that's what I felt like happened there. That wasn't unique to mine. But what I will say is I feel like there are a checks and balance type system in near-death experience. So you have your human form that says I can stay or I can't, because literally sometimes our human form is so traumatized, it can't retain life. Then you have the soul level, which your soul says, okay, I want to stay, I want to go. And then there's source, the divine, God, whatever you want to call the universe, that actually gives you that ultimate stamp of you can stay or you can go, depending on where everything else is lining up.
When you were in the hospital for another week after this, number two, near-death experience, did you talk to the people who were caring for you about this? I'm just wondering that, you know, if you did, did they say, oh, the girl's delirious, or did they say, we hear this from people all the time?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it to one or two people and they considered me like delirious. And so I just, once again, I was like, okay, I'll just keep that to myself. That was very real, but I don't need any labels put on me. So I just kind of quickly learned that I was like, okay, that's between me and God.
Okay, so back you come, life proceeds as normal. But you had a third, you know, I mean, one is experience enough. Two's a lot.
Absolutely.
Three is just overkill, isn't it?
I agree.
What happened in number three?
Okay, so in number three, it was It was in, actually, for people who love numbers, it was on 11-1-11, so November 1st, 2011. And I have 14-foot ceilings in my house. By this point in time, my kids were 5, 8, and 10 years old. And I have these candles. They're beautiful. They're battery operated. I put them up about 12 feet high, and every night they would come on and glow for about 5 hours and turn off. So my younger two kids were home, and my oldest was at school. And I said, as soon as I put these batteries back up, or these candles back up, we're going to go pick up your sister. So I climb up the ladder, and as I get to the top, I can feel it shift. And I think immediately, oh, this is going to hurt. That I just had enough time to say, this is going to hurt, because I knew I was going to fall. And at that moment, I was literally ripped out of my body, not in a painful way, but so fast. Turned around facing myself and the ladder suspended in the air. And I realized I'm standing with these three people, and I remember them very clearly. One was a Hawaiian male, one was an Egyptian female, and one was an Asian man. I did not know them in this life, but I felt like I had known them forever and like they were family, friends. And I was standing with them, and they said, what would you like to do? Would you like to stay or would you like to go? And I remember looking at my body thinking, okay, I'm going to hit the floor in a second, but I feel like I have forever to decide. There was no hurry. And I kept getting kind of like, wow, what's going on here? What's going on here? And at that moment, I see another huge angel come in on the opposite side of the ladder. This one is dressed quite differently than the first one. And this angel, I know as soon as I see it, is either going to take me home or make things work out so that I can stay, even though I don't know what that is. And so as I'm sitting here thinking, wow, I have forever to decide. This is so crazy. I'm going to hit the floor, but no rush, right? All of a sudden, I see my younger two kids in the kitchen. And I know I have to stay. And at that moment, it was as if I was downloaded with a million pieces of information at once. And it was like, okay, Michelle, you can stay, but we expect more from you this time. We expect you to go pack and help people in only the way that your soul can. So there are millions of mediums, but my soul resonates differently than everyone's, just like everyone's soul does, right? So it was like, you've got to go back. You've got to do what you came to do. Being a stay-at-home mom's wonderful, but that's just a piece of who you are, that your soul has more plans. And so I just got all of these downloads, and I don't believe I even remember them all this day.
Okay, we'll talk about the downloads in a second. I just want to ask one question that has been burning in my brain since you said this, and I'm sure my listener too has been thinking this. You had those three people and the angel who was there to facilitate whatever you wanted, ultimately. I'd have asked one other question, I have to say. And that question would be, if I am going to fall off this ladder and come back, when I wake up, is it going to hurt? Did you ask that question?
I did not ask that question.
So you were in a situation where you were just willing to accept the consequences of whatever you did.
Yes. Ooh. I will say this, on a bigger level, I knew that I would come back and be okay, even though I did not know what that looked like. I just knew that I wasn't coming back to live my life paralyzed from the neck down, and I wasn't coming back. So there was some assurance like, no, it's going to be pretty normal, but you've got to go back if you're going.
Okay. And you know, how were you when you said, I want to go back? Well, then you've got to complete your fall off the ladder. Otherwise, people will ask questions. So, you know, that's got to happen for you. You know, it's real life. It's not I Dream of Jeannie. So what happened? How badly were you hurt that time?
Very badly. I fell. I hit the back of my skull. I had a 5.5-inch skull fracture, a brain bleed. I lost my taste, my smell, my hearing, part of my hearing, my equilibrium. And I was on the floor.
And how long did it take you to recover from that, Michelle?
It took me months. It took me months. But here was the thing. I came back with a sense of gratitude that was beyond me. And I just, so I would tell you the hardest part of all of that was losing my smell. I missed smelling my kids when I would hug them. And you think, you don't realize how your sense of smell keeps you present in the moment, right? If the garbage stinks, it needs to go out now, but you're right here, right now. And so there was a lot of that that happened. Well, when I got to the hospital and they did the CAT scan, and a few days later after I got out of ICU, the doctor came into me and said, Michelle, you missed your brainstem by 0.5 inch. You literally survived the fall by 0.5 inch. And I knew that angel had moved my head just enough to survive it.
10 years since that happened. Mm-hmm. How are you? I mean, you look, I'm seeing video from you. I would not know that you've been through anything.
Yes. You know what? I'm doing so well. I am doing so well. The neurologist had told me about 6 months out, you will not get your taste and smell back and different things like that. And so I was really depressed after they told me that. And then what happened was I went home and I said, you know what? That's not my story. I don't know how, but that's not my story. And so this is really important for your listeners to know. Always leave room for a miracle. Because miracles do happen. Mm. Humans call them miracles. Spirit calls them happenings. Because when we get in alignment and we let the universe work the way that it's intended to work, literally miracles happen. So 3 years later, I had gone to a healer who one of my friends had told me about. And she called me up and she told me about the Holy Spirit working through me. And literally the next morning, I woke up and I could taste and smell again.
Were you religious before this?
I was raised Catholic, and but at that point in time, I was probably more practicing just Christianity. So I absolutely always believed in a higher power. I believed in angels and saints and beams of light wanting to help us on our way. But I would say a lot of the deep religious beliefs never really resonated with me. I kind of thought, well, that's weird. I don't know that God thinks that. But yes, overall, I had always had belief in something so much more.
Now, this is a hard one, but you will have heard it before, okay? And this is the old news guy coming out again, so forgive me for this, but I've got to ask it. Yeah, I mean, you had these experiences of, you know, the injuries and near-death experiences, you know, two of them very serious medical traumatic situations. Are you sure in your own mind, and are other people who've examined you and talked with you sure, that what you think is connection with another realm isn't just an artifact of your brain because you've had these medical emergencies? I mean, there's no other way to put it. So you know right. What I'm saying? So that's the hard question. Yes. It's got to be asked.
No, that's a great question. It's perfect to ask because I will tell you, there were moments after my head injury where I wondered that myself. Is this real? What am I knowing? So what I did is I went and was tested to become a certified medium. And so let me tell you how that worked.
Okay, can I ask you one question before you tell me how that worked? I read that on your website. What is a certified medium? I don't think we have certified mediums here.
Okay, so it's amazing. So what I do is I applied, you have to get accepted, I got accepted, and what they do is they say, okay, Wednesday at 10 a.m., log on to your Skype. And so I log on, my screen's black, I can't see the person, and I just start telling them, I have a grandfather figure coming through, he says his name starts with an H, and start giving them the information that I'm getting. And so you do 5 blind Skype readings, you don't even know if you're reading for a male or a female.
Who for?
And then at that,
I mean, what organization for? Sorry, I jumped in.
Yeah, no, it's actually called Find a Certified Medium. Mm-hmm. And Mark Ireland is the man who runs this program.
All right. Okay. So you're not just a medium, you're a certified medium. Sorry. please continue the story beyond. I just had to ask that.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, you do all of these readings and they score you. So if you, depending on how much information you get, well, at the point in time that I did it, I was one of the top scoring people he had ever had come through. And it was absolutely amazing. And so that actually gave me the confidence to say, look, I don't even know who I'm reading for, but I'm getting information for them that is real, relevant, and they understand. And so the question of, and I will tell you, I was a little worried too when this started happening because I thought people are going to think I hit my head really, really, really hard and that this is more than connection. But it's not. It's absolutely the ability to connect with spirit.
So when you got better after that long period of recuperation, of healing in yourself, and when you got your sense of smell and taste and everything else back, you know, apart from being massively thankful, which I know you were, what did you do? What did you think was, they said you got to do a bit more this time. So what did you do about that?
Right. Well, the funniest part is the very beginning, right after I started functioning decently after my head injury, was I went into counseling because I was getting these visits. And, you know, the divine will guide us where we need to go. And I found an amazing counselor who said, Michelle, this is a gift. You can help people. Look at what you can do. And so then I started finding people who I could mentor with, who could help me learn how to train it, hone it, access it better. And so I started doing that in my free time, besides being a wife and a mom and, you know, everything else that was going on.
Okay. So before that point, before the 2011 incident, you weren't actually working, quotes, as a medium. That's when this started. You've been doing this for 10 years now, yeah?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And this idea, I know that when you were a kid, you felt very much the presence of your grandparents. Mm-hmm. But how do you facilitate, do you think, connection with... If somebody comes to see you, they've come to see you for a reason, right? They're not just coming just to chat with you. there's always a reason, and that reason is probably they've lost somebody and they want to be able to connect with those people. How does that work for you then? How do you make that happen?
Yeah. So think of it all as energy or a frequency. Okay. And I like to tell people, think of an old fashioned radio, right? Where you're going to tune the dial in. So if somebody comes to me and they're saying specifically, I need to connect with my son, and they give me his name, it's like going to channel 103. And I know, okay, here we are. I'm getting on the frequency to connect with their son. Now, saying that, right now I'm not listening to the AM radio station or the FM radio station, but it's always playing. Just like our loved ones are always around us, our angels are, our life guides. And so it's about taking the time to tune in to their frequency and what they're telling you.
Can you, without breaching any confidences, because I'm sure that's part of your business model, that you can't do that. Of course not. It's ethics. Talk to me about the sorts of things you've been able to tell people, and, you know, maybe they've been amazed at the things that you've told them.
You know, yes, some of them have been very amazing. One of the ladies I was reading for this summer, she is in North Dakota in the States here, and she's an RN. And as I was reading for her, I felt Mother Teresa come in, and I was like, oh, okay. And I said to her, I have Mother Teresa here. She said, I know, I worked with her in Calcutta.
Oh, Lord.
And I was just like, I know. And Mother Teresa came in with the most powerful message for her, because this lady is an RN, her mom's sick, she has kids, she's literally giving away herself all the time. And Mother Teresa came in and said to her, I never lost myself in service to anyone. I always knew who I was, and that was what made me able to serve. And I just thought, wow. So some of the messages that come through are so powerful.
That's profound. That is profound. So Mother Teresa was telling her that you know, we're here in service, we have to give, but there is a limit beyond which you should not give. That's
Absolutely.
What she was kind of saying. But you couldn't, you know, unless there's something here that I don't know, you didn't know of the connection, did you?
No, I had no idea.
Does that happen all the time?
It happens very frequently. A lot of times I will have, like, I'm connected to groups with parents whose kids have transitioned, and they'll say, you know, my kid, I asked him to bring up something today specific, and we'll go through the reading, and the child will bring it up. And so I will often say, like, don't tell me, I don't want to know details going into this. And I'm okay with people being skeptical, just be open-minded. How do I know these things about your loved ones and your life without ever meeting you?
I don't know how many questions you ask the people before you start to read for them. I mean, my skeptical listeners will say it's because of the questions that you've asked beforehand, and questions that you might ask them during that lead them on. What would you say to that?
I would say I don't ask questions. So I will tell you, sometimes people come to me with, they want to say, you know, do I change jobs? Do I stay in my job? Mm. What do I do? And they have specific questions. Well, that gives me a direction. It's like that radio channel, right? So I can target it like that. But when I have people come to me, I don't say, okay, tell me everyone that's transitioned for you. What do you want to know from them? No, it's just kind of like, okay, this is what I'm getting, and here we go. And then it's amazing, because actually a lot of times when they do have questions, I'll say, why don't you save your questions for the second half of our reading? By the time we get there, spirit's already answered them.
What's the connection I don't think I've ever asked a medium this, and boy, I've spoken with a few. I mean, I first started going to mediums, too many, I think, in my 20s. I was so fascinated, I would just, you know, go to another one, go to another one. The connection between what you say is communication with those who have passed and being able to answer questions like the guy who says, or the woman who says, you know, I want to know if I should take this job I've just been offered. I don't know how those things connect, your loved ones and destiny, your future.
Absolutely. So I believe we are living life with what I call a spirit team around us. That is our loved ones in spirit, our angels, and our life guides. So for example, I had the lady come in and she said, you know, I've been offered this other position at work. I really don't want it. And I hear her loved ones and I can feel the energy. She needs to change jobs. She needs to take it. She needs to take it. And her loved ones are saying, tell her to take it. And so I say, well, you have free will, but I'm telling you the information I'm getting is you need to take that job. And she says, I don't really want to take that job. I said, okay, you have free will, but you came to me with this question. And the answer is you should take the new job. So after about a week, she decided to go ahead and take the new job. 2 weeks later, she called me and she said, Michelle, you are not going to believe this. The company eliminated my position. Had I not taken that job, I would have no job right now. And so I was just like, wow, kudos to you for listening to you, the information that came through. The way that the psychic and the medium work, it's all energy. It's all energy. So basically, I would describe the psychic part of it as like you say, okay, I'm trying to, you know, give me three options. I want to do this job, this job, this job. For me, energetically, I feel one that I either feel pulled to that has a higher frequency, a higher vibration for you. But it's kind of like the energy of the path you're going down. You can always take that right turn and get off the path, which people do all the time with free will. But for me, it's reading what's most likely to happen.
Among the things listed on your website that you do is home clearing. Now, my listeners will know that I live in an apartment that is much in need of extensive renovation, so I need to do a bit of that myself. I've been trying today, but I get lost in it. That's not the kind of home clearing that you do, though, is it?
No.
What is home clearing, then? What are you clearing?
Yeah, so usually sometimes I have clients come to me and they have energies in their house or souls that have transitioned but not exactly stepped into the light quite yet that are still hanging around there. And so basically people will say, you know, it's like getting rid of ghosts or an energy that doesn't belong there.
That's exorcism, isn't it?
No, I don't think so, because I don't feel like it's about possessed people. I feel like it's about spirits not being exactly where they need to be yet. So sometimes, here's one situation. I've had only really one huge personal ghost encounter for myself. And this was, I was at ION, so that's the Institute of Noetic Studies up by San Francisco, doing a study for them. And I went to the hotel, and as soon as I walked in, I was like, oh my gosh, this place is haunted. I could just feel it. Well, that night, the thermostat in the room kept going down. I could not keep the temperature where I wanted it. And I had my daughter with me, who was 17 at the time. And at that point I said, I'm going to hop in the shower. She's like, I'm going to bed. I get in the shower. And in the exact same second, the water turns ice cold and the lights go pitch black. And at that moment I saw this elderly woman in front of me. And with that being said, I was started screaming. I'm like, oh my God, Ashley, turn on the lights, get me a towel. And so I get out and she comes in and I tell her what happened. And she's like, okay. And she goes back to bed. And I was just thinking to myself, what 17-year-old goes back to bed when I just told her there's a ghost in our room? But she's like, you'll handle it, Mom. So I'm looking at this beautiful elderly lady. And I can tell she is scared to walk into the light. It felt like she was fearful of being judged. So this is a lot of her human stuff. And so what I did was I sat down on the bed. I started calling in the light. I started calling in angels and started telling her, it's okay. You can go now. You're going to be safe. You're going to be loved. It's going to be so much better for you. And I felt that she had been in that hotel for around 50 years. I don't know how long that is in ghost time, but that's the human time. And as I was watching her, I saw the angels come in. I saw her kind of hunched over and elderly. She steps into the light and immediately stands up straight, tall, young, probably 30 years old, and is gone. and she was able to move into the light. So sometimes we have energies that have not transitioned for one reason or another, and that would be the house clearing part of that. Or sometimes people just, they get a new home and they say, you know what, come in and bless it. Let's bring in the angels. Let's bring in the good energy. Let's make this a place of peace and health and prosperity. So there are many different reasons for doing a home clearing.
Have you ever dealt with a poltergeist?
I have not. That is definitely not my specialty. So I would definitely refer them out to someone else probably for something like that. But as far as home clearings, I have done home clearings where I was like, oh yeah, there's an energy here, a young girl, this or that. I'll pick up on who they are, maybe why they're still there, why they don't want to go, and then always coax them into the light and just calling in the angels, the light, you know, higher beings to help them on their journey. I feel like most people that don't step into the light immediately, it's because they're afraid of being judged.
Right. What? So they're afraid of the process of transitioning and whether they will be assessed on the way. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, I've done nothing seriously bad. I think I probably hurt one or two people in my lifetime with my, you know, moves around the country. And, you know, well, I've got another job now, bye-bye kind of thing when I was a young man. But, you know, I sometimes think about when it's time to go, then there will be some, you know, nothing too serious, but there will be questions to be answered. And, you know, I don't relish that. I mean, I don't know why I'm revealing this now, but I don't think that's probably most people's life story, isn't it? That, you know, there are things that you, if you believe this kind of stuff, you don't want to be asked about. And that's what holds people back, is it?
I think so, yes. And what they don't realize is that you're going to a place of unconditional love. The only one judging you is you. And so I would say the life review process is not someone pointing their finger at you and you're on trial and you're trying to defend your actions. It's not that at all. It's you getting to see your life, how the decisions you made affected others, and then your soul learns instantly from that. And so it's not done with judgment. It's done more like, oh yeah, maybe I could have done that better. Okay, yeah, that wasn't the best call. Hey, that was awesome. I feel really good about that. But it's never done in a place of shame and judging the spirit who is returning home.
Well, that's going to be a relief for an awful lot of people. What about the bad things that happened to you in the course of your life? You know, most of those for me have been things that have happened. If you have a media career, you work in broadcasting, you know, not everybody's going to be an angel to you, quite literally. You have your bad experiences, and I sure as hell have had mine. During that process of transitioning, do you have to go through all of that again?
You know what? I think you know it, but I don't want to say you have to feel it. Do you have to feel that pain again? Do you have to feel the turmoil? No, because your soul is so much more than what our human minds can comprehend. So there is an infinite knowledge where you can say, oh yeah, okay, maybe I fed into that situation by doing this and that person. Okay, got it. It's not going to take you years of going through these experiences on a soul level to know them. I really don't. So no, you can know things without feeling them.
What about dying then? If you have this connection with the other side, when we die, we know that people die in various ways. They die unexpectedly, sometimes in accidents like the one that you had or others, or they, you know, they come to the end of their time. They're tired, they're old, and it's time to go, time to check out. What is that process, as far as you know, like? People go through sometimes a real hard time. You know, most people don't just die peacefully in their sleep. I think that's what I'm trying to say. How much of that do you think, and have you been told, do those people who are dying actually experience? Are they taken away from that? Is the worst of it removed? As some people, like, you know, who do what you do say, is the worst of that shielded from you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do believe it is. I will say this. So my mom transitioned from breast cancer, so it was quite a process. She actually fought it for 20 years. There was a lot of suffering that happened to her on the human level. But towards the end, when it was literally her time to transition, she wasn't feeling pain. She was in peace. There was a lot of light around her. And I would say, yes, our human bodies suffer, but you have to know that our soul doesn't necessarily carry that. And I really find for a lot of people, no matter how traumatically or untraumatically they transition, they're not feeling it at the end. Their soul is far enough detached that it's not feeling the pain. It might look tough, but the soul is not connected. And that's the part where the memory and the love and the compassion lives.
You mentioned the Institute of Noetic Studies that you've done work for. You also talked about that certification process that I've never heard of before. You're clearly not worried about being tested, are you?
You know what? I'm not. I do my best for every person I read for every single time. And saying that, what I really realized when I first started doing mediumship was I was scared. I was like, what if somebody comes to me and their loved ones don't show up, and they come in and sit down and I say, I have nothing. I'm sorry. There's nothing for you today. But what I've found over time is that's so exactly opposite of what it really is. Our loved ones, our angels, our life guides are always trying to get messages to us, let us know that they are still connected to us. So that is not something I worry about. So yes, when I do testing, I go in and I'm like, okay, here we go. And really for me, this isn't about me as far as am I getting all of this amazing information. It's about me listening clearly to spirit and your loved ones and your angels and giving you the messages that I'm getting. So once I've learned that it's about my ability to connect with spirit and relay the information accurately. And I can do that. So I'm confident in my ability to do that.
How many people do you talk to a day?
I usually do, well, it will depend. Some days I will do short readings, like in group settings, and then I'll do a couple of those. I'll get to maybe 40 people. But regularly, I would say I do between 4 and 8 readings a day.
Does it tire you out? Do you get tired?
No. Yeah, that's a great question. Not usually, no. Usually because I'm channeling this energy that isn't mine, I don't physically get tired from it. Actually, some days when I do a lot of readings, I'm almost like high or giddy from it. Like, oh my gosh, you know, the energy's got me kind of amped up. So yeah, I don't get too tired from it.
I mean, you are a dynamo of energy, if I may say so. And that
well,
comes,
thank you.
If I wasn't seeing you, I'd get that off your voice. You know, I'm a radio guy. I listen to voices. I understand sound. And,
yeah.
You know, you radiate energy. I suppose this, I'm going to ask it. Since you had your experiences, have you changed? Or have you always been this person?
No, I've changed. I have definitely changed. I would say I'm more positive. I'm more radiant, or I feel more radiant. And I also realize that there's so much happening. Before, in my human mind, I'd say, why is my best friend keep dating these guys who are losers? Now I look at somebody and I say, oh, I wonder what they're trying to learn on the soul level. So the excitement, the enthusiasm, the radiant love from above, I get to connect to that every day. And it absolutely has changed the person that I am.
Always something to learn. That's a great way of looking at life anyway, I think, whether you're a medium or not. I have never spoken with a medium, and it's on your, I've printed out the front page of the homepage of your website here. I've never spoken with a medium who does remote viewing. According to this, you do.
I do. I usually do it for health. So I actually have a couple clients in the UK, and I'll be able to energetically say, oh, I'm feeling this on their body. I have started doing it more for location of objects, but I specialize in using it as a health technique.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, presumably, if I was doing this on the radio, I would have to say, quite rightly, it's very important that people go to their medical practitioner. You know, if they want to do this with you, that's fine, but they must also go to we call them GPs here, they must go to a doctor.
Absolutely, because I'm not a doctor, but I'll often get information about something, or even when I'm reading for people, it will come in and I'll be like, I have your grandpa here. Did he have a really bad right shoulder? Did he have a shoulder replacement? And I'll start feeling physical symptoms from the grandfather. So I always tell people that too. I am not a doctor. I'll tell you what I'm getting, but you got to go to your doctor.
And you said that you started to use remote viewing for finding things.
Mm-hmm. I have. Now, I have not mastered that technique yet. I would say I'm still mentoring and training in that, but I'm getting better.
Are there any things that you would like to do that you haven't done?
You know, I would love to help people with cold cases, or the police at some point in time find with cold cases. I think that would be really interesting. I would love to travel more. I'm waiting for COVID to calm down so that I can get back out in the world and do more group readings and seminars. And I miss the human interaction on that large level. I love readings over Zoom. Two-thirds of my readings are Zoom now, so I still get to see people and connect with them. But I think, like most people, I miss the human action, interaction.
Now, my friends who are skeptical would be very skeptical of the idea that you can do this over Zoom. I mean, you know, like if you didn't know me, if we weren't doing this conversation now, and if I'd found you and I'd made an appointment with you and we were doing a consultation, how on earth, I think there are 5,500 miles or so between me in London and you in Phoenix. How on earth could you make that work?
Yeah, because spirit makes it work. So spirit, like I was talking about earlier, doesn't have to be in one place at one time. They can be in more than one place at one time. So your grandmother, your mother, whoever can be standing there with you in London and at the same time with me in Phoenix, giving me the information that I need to get to you.
And we've talked about the skeptics, and there are skeptics, and quite rightly, some of those people are academics who want to research, and they say they have yet to come across a medium who comprehensively proves to them that there is something beyond this life and they can see things that might happen in the future. If people are skeptical around you and to you, what do you tell them?
You know, I'm okay with people being skeptical. I just say, please be open-minded. How do I know that your grandmother left you a ruby ring? How do I know, you know, whatever these exact details are, how would I know those things about you, right? So I would say it's okay to be skeptical, but be open-minded. So like, well, I have no idea how she knows my grandma left me the ruby ring or whatever this is, right? So it's okay. I think we should question things. I think there's a reason things that people feel this way about mediums, because there have been a lot of frauds and a lot of people that have done a lot of damage over the years. So I always say it's like, if you are a good medium, it's trying to dig out of the hole so that people even look at you and say, well, maybe that's real. You know what I mean? But with that being said, be skeptical, but please just be open-minded.
You know, I think I might have, I think we all probably have, but I might have a little bit of this myself. In my lifetime, I've told people things, and I thought, how the hell did I know that? That's by the by. I think probably, you know, most people could do that if they wanted to. So here comes a question that comes from that side that wasn't going to be part of this conversation. Why would it be? But it's something to do with animals and you, the way that you relate to animals. Is there anything that you're doing at the moment that is particularly to do with an animal? Now, here's me testing myself now. Is that part of a dog in particular, I think?
Yes, absolutely. One of my dogs I've been doing a lot of energy work on. But what I love about animals, right, is that their soul transitions to this heavenly realm too. So there's been misconception about, no, they don't go to heaven, whatever that is. That is not true. And communication with animals is really good for me. So one time I was reading for someone whose dog, it was a Jack Russell dog, came through. He had transitioned already. And he kept smiling at me and showing me his teeth. And I kept telling this, I'm like, I don't know why your dog keeps showing me his teeth. And they said, oh my gosh, my dog got bit by a rattlesnake, had to have the antivenom and all of its teeth fell out. And so I was amazed by that, because I want people to know your animals go on. Your animals are still connected to you too. And there, it's a soul. So being able to communicate, sometimes animals give phenomenal information because they're connecting to me as a soul with telepathic information, not as your dog who doesn't speak English, right? So much bigger than the body that they had on Earth.
See, it's been testing for all of us, but it's been testing for me this last year or so, because I've been, and you know, I've now really learned how to do it. I work out of my own little home studio now, and I've got it all engineered the way that I want it. So much so that, you know, I think, you know, my hero was Art Bell, who did Coast to Coast AM. He was the founder of that, and I knew him towards the back end of his life, and he worked from his home studio, and I was always so impressed with that. I am now doing that myself. But sometimes I'll go and say, I've got a park near me, and it's big and green, and it's nice. You know, for London, it's amazing to have something like this. Sometimes I'll sit on a bench, especially over this last year, and it happened today. It happened yesterday as well, actually. And dogs come to me. I don't quite understand that, because they don't appear to be going to other people necessarily, but they will make a beeline for me sitting on the bench. Now, you know, maybe that's something to do with what I've had for lunch or something. I don't know, but I'm not having my lunch on the bench. But they come to kind of check in on me. It's weird. Yes. What?
It's your,
I don't know why I'm asking this, but what's that all about?
Yes, it's your energy. So it's so funny that you bring that up, because I always tell my kids, like, if you ever have a dog and it doesn't like someone, trust their instincts on that. because I would say your energy is so open and so loving that, of course, these beautiful creatures are attracted to you in that way. And they're just popping in to say hi. The fun thing to do with dogs is to try to clear your mind and see if they give you a visual image. So dogs are, even in this life, telepathic. So we can send them mental images. So with my dog, sometimes I will show her a picture of her getting up and going to the door so I can let her out back to go get a drink of water or whatever. And then within seconds, she gets up and goes to the door. So it's really fun. They'll send you images. They know feelings. Dogs are amazing at knowing energy, knowing what people need, and actually helping humans heal.
Strange. I tend to talk to animals in a rational way. Yeah. Feeling that they will understand, and usually they do.
There's a cat
outside my apartment. There's another apartment in another block, and there's a young woman who lives there. She's got a cat, and this cat is very nervous of people. And this happened a couple of months ago, and now the cat's my best friend. But I was thinking about this cat, and, you know, I wanted to stroke this cat and get to know it. And I was kind of radiating to it. Now, my skeptical listeners are going to write me off now. But I was thinking at it, I'm okay. I'm okay, and I just want to say hello, and, you know, I'd like to be your friend, because since you live here. And the cat, now, when I see it, and it's a very, very nervous cat, doesn't bother with people. Will always come to me and will always instantly roll over. And, you know, it's no claws, nothing like that. It's remarkable. Now, maybe that's just one of those things, but I thought thoughts at that cat, and that cat knew. God knows why we're having this conversation about animals, but I'm glad that we did. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about I should have?
You know, not that I can think of. I have absolutely enjoyed this conversation with you.
Yeah, you too. You too. And, you know, I think every so often we have to explore these things, because at the end of the day, there may be politics, there may be a thousand other things to talk about. But at the end of the day, our lives are about us coming into this world, us leaving this world, and what we do in the middle bit. And that's where it's at. And that's where you're at, I think. Michelle, thank you very much indeed. What's your website if my UK listeners and listeners around the world want to visit that?
Yes, it's MichelleClaire.net.
Okay, and you're a double L, Michelle.
Yes, right. I am. Thank you.
Michelle in Phoenix from London, where it's evening time. I know it's morning time for you. Thank you very much, and I hope we talk again.
Thank you so much, Howard. Have a beautiful evening.
Your thoughts welcome on Michelle Clare. I know not every listener likes to hear mediums on this show, but I think we've got to mix it up and do all kinds of different things and meet a variety of people. Otherwise, what is the point? Would be my thought about that. If you want to make contact with me, go to my website, theunexplained.tv, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link and you can send me an email from there. And if you've made a donation to the online show recently, thank you very, very much from the bottom of my heart. I know times are tough. And for you to be able to do that in these times is very, very heartwarming to me. So thank you. More great guests in the pipeline here on the online version of The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. And when you do get in touch, don't forget, tell me who you are, whereabouts in the world you are, and how you make use of this show. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.